Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is Shane Keith Rhodes. He is a professional trainer with 35 years of experience in fitness, wellness, and the rehabilitation industry. His comprehensive background includes working in professional baseball, college athletics, spine and back rehab, physical therapy, private training, and consulting. For 20 years, Shane worked exclusively in the Pilates environment, helping clients with programs adapted for chronic medical conditions, postural alignment, and movement education. His philosophy is centered on a personalized, holistic approach to wellness, blending the principles of Pilates with the science of physical therapy and exercise physiology to establish optimal movement mechanics. In 2017, Shane opened Movement Med Pilates Rehabilitation and Medical Exercise Studio in the Chicago Streeterville neighborhood. Shane, welcome to SpondyCast. Thanks for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
So today we are going to discuss Pilates for spondyloarthritis and flexibility and strengthening through movement. I should give a disclaimer that we know each other and that I have been a victim on your table in the past. And I'm a believer in the movement that Pilates brings. So I wonder if you can just tell us a little bit about your background and how you got interested in Pilates and in my case and some others, spondyloarthritis pain.
Okay, great. I'll try to make it short because it's a long story and there's like an element early on that is a seed for later. You know, I've been in fitness 35 years. I think my first fitness job, I was a freshman in college. I got a job in corporate fitness. But at some point I was working in sports. I was a strength coach and an athlete trainer in grad school. Athlete trainers being the guys that help take care of injuries and prevent injuries, and strength coaches, the guys that get you stronger and faster. But I had the combination. So I ended up always being that go-to coach that worked with the athletes in that last phase of rehab, right before they went full go performance again. And I just found, I was fascinated with that area. I was fascinated with the psychology of it. I was fascinated with how do you bring someone to like a normal area of performance again. So about after that, I kind of bounced around the industry. As she said, I worked in sports, got out of it, worked in various levels of fitness and sales at one point. And then I just wanted to get back into working with people, but I didn't want to go back into sports performance. So then I discovered Pilates. At the time, it was starting to gain, it had been around a long time, but it was getting popularity on the in the media. The Windsor Pilates, you remember that Windsor Pilates with the DVDs and all
the Yeah. I remember that.
And Pilates and, you know.
Were they DVDs or VCR tapes?
VCR. But that was where people started to knew it. I had no interest in that, but I knew about Pilates from that. But then I came across this article. It was called Intro to Pilates-Based Rehabilitation by Brent Anderson. He was the founder of the group that I got trained through. And I was reading through it, and I'm like, this makes so much sense. It's like that aha moment. I can work with everyone throughout their life, and I can help people overcome challenges on a journey to better health. So that's kind of why I embraced it. I said, I can see so much I can do using this system, using this environment to help someone.
I love that. I love the inspiration. So for those of our listeners that aren't familiar with Pilates, and what was the aha moment for you? Like, what are the core principles of Pilates and what was it that attracted you to it?
Let me start with, you mind if I tell a story of Joe?
I love the stories. Okay. The ones about Joe.
Before Pilates, there was Joe Pilates.
Right.
So Joe Pilates, late 1800s, sickly child. I believe rumors are his mom was like a naturopath and his father was a gymnast.
Okay. So
grew up trying to improve his own health and just had that passion for health and fitness. And around the time of the World War I beginning 1914, he was living in London, teaching martial arts and fitness and strength training. And then he was put into an internment camp at the Isle of Man because he was a German national. So while he was in the internment camp, still being the health guy, he started teaching exercise to the fellow prisoners. And at one point, he started helping in the hospital with the injured soldiers coming back. And this is the interesting point, and whether it's true or not, he started playing with the bed springs and creating mechanisms on the beds because he believed if these injured soldiers could move their limbs earlier in the rehab process, they would heal faster, which is unheard of because we were mobilizing people for months on end back then.
Right.
Yeah, so he was...
Until like 10 years ago.
Yes, and then he started drawing diagrams of these machines. So, everyone knows the Pilates mat routine. He tried to develop the perfect sequence of exercises for total health. And the machines he originally designed were to help you get stronger to do the mat sequence. Later on, many years later, rehab professionals started playing with the machines and they saw there's so many advantages of working with rehabilitation, especially rehabilitation of the spine. That became more of a contemporary approach to Pilates. But the principles, the original principles, if I can remember them, breath was number one.
Yeah.
Joe may have said, your first and last act of life above all is breathing. And above all, you should learn to do it properly. Above all things, learn to do it properly. Concentration, control, precision, center, and that's the core. Everyone knows Pilates for everything coming from a strong core, and then flow, ability to move through these exercises with fluidity. That was the original core principles. But what I found most fascinating about Pilates equipment, the environment, I can create a positive movement experience for anybody walking through these doors, no matter what their challenges are. You can set up the springs and the machines to work very subtle and isolating to full body and complex. You can take gravity out of the picture and have someone lying on their back so they can have more control in their exercise to challenge them later. So that was one of the things that really stood out with me. If your listeners haven't seen the machines or Pilates, there's springs like the original bed springs. You can set up these scenarios to help one move better, so you can increase mobility. There's an aspect of what they call neuromuscular re-education, so I can reteach your body to move more efficiently. A body that moves more efficiently through space there's less stress on the joints. And then eventually I can use those same springs to load the body to make it stronger. And of course, if you may have experienced with Pilates, there's lots of variety.
Yeah.
So it makes it more interesting. You're not doing four sets of 10 reps of this exercise. You just come in at all these different angles and changing things all the time while you have a purpose. And sometimes that's the beauty of it that people like. It keeps them from being bored.
I think there's this in some postures, there's the ability to like let go where you normally wouldn't let go, like let your body go a little further because you've got like a fence around it, so to speak. And I think like for people with spondylitis, what you talked about, this element of like moving more efficiently, could be helpful. And you and I had gone through early on where I used my neck for a lot of things.
Right.
And we sort of retrained to be using other parts of my body to engage things. But is that like once you start Pilates and you sort of would you call it like retraining your body or?
Retraining your body, especially retraining your body when you've had a history of chronic pain.
Yeah.
Your brain needs to know it's okay to move in certain ways. And sometimes in the Pilates environment, we can set up a situation where you can move without pain and you can move in ways you haven't been moving in a long time. And you can eventually tell your brain and your nervous system, this is okay. And it's a very empowering moment for some people to be able to move that way again without pain.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, and in terms of specific exercises, for someone with right spondyloarthritis pain, in this case, I'm thinking about neck and lower back pain. Like, what are those exercises or movements in Pilates? Are they core based or limb based? What would you focus on for somebody with pain in their neck and lower back, or maybe even peripheral joint pain? I know that's a tough one because it's kind of specialized, but.
Yeah. So I think, well, the core, it provides our support for our spine and stability, right? And it's very core centric Pilates. So developing some functional strength in the core will help support the spine through movement, dissipate forces. The breath work is another important aspect of it. Learning to calm the nervous system while you're moving and loading the body or moving the body through space. You know, when you've had a history of chronic pain or a long-term chronic pain, and then you start to move again, to be able to breathe more calmly is very effective. And like I said, we can, within Pilates, you can set up situations where you can start to do that again without the pain or with the proper breathing, strong core, support the spine. And then we always try to mobilize or the joints of the spilosy more mobile, hips, ankles, your thoracic spine, you know, even with the breath work, rib cages to become more fused or tight. We can kind of mobilize the ribs just with breathing. So I think, is that where you were going with that?
Yeah, is the reformer something? Can we talk a little bit about that rib cage in Pilates and what you do with your ribs in Pilates?
Well, I always try to teach people a good diaphragm breathing pattern, because diaphragm breathing is a more efficient breathing. Diaphragm breathing helps you tap into your calming nervous system, your parasympathetic nervous system, and the diaphragm is actually a spinal stabilizer too. So utilizing a better diaphragm breathing pattern is going to provide that support, not just for your spine, but also your nervous system.
And as you're laying on the reformer or the mat, often I hear Pilates teachers talk about like getting your rib cage to meet the mat and open up a little bit. Is that the diaphragmatic breathing you're talking about?
Oh, no, it's not. We tend to, these days, work more from a neutral spine position, you know, and then the diaphragm breathing's, you know, breathing from your diaphragm, expanding your rib cage.
Okay, so for somebody who might be newly diagnosed with spondyloarthritis, what would you recommend in terms of incorporating Pilates into their routine?
I would start with having a one-on-one lesson if you can. Now, I understand like one-on-one Pilates or any kind of private training is costly, and that's a downside of that. I always encourage people to have an upfront conversation with their trainer and say, listen, I can afford classes. I want to learn about my body. I can only do one or two of these. What can we do in this session that you can educate me? And then you can start with trying to like teach someone the elements they need to know to move more safely if they go to a class. So I always like to start with a one-on-one lesson. I think that's the first start. You know, hire a professional to teach you about Pilates and also help you learn more about your body.
Right, because there are a lot of not that there's anything wrong with them, but there are a lot of these like Pilates fitness studios.
Yeah.
But then there is also this rehabilitative
Pilates. Right. It's like, you know, Pilates is still booming.
Which is great, right? It's
taking different forms. You know, now there's like the basically the big group nightclubs where it's like flashing music and like
and you do Pilates? I haven't seen these.
Oh, there's one like right around the corner for me.
Really?
Yeah.
20 up north or downtown?
Nearby.
Oh my gosh. Okay, we're gonna have to talk about that.
It's fine for, you know, it's fine to do that for most people. But trying to navigate a big group class that's geared towards maybe a more intense fitness population when you have a condition you're trying to overcome, then you can kind of step into the wrong facility. So sure. Doing your due diligence to find the right place that you can, that can help you and help you navigate the condition you're trying to overcome and get more fit.
And you specifically focus on more than spondyl arthritis, but primarily back issues in Pilates. And people with chronic back issues, and you do, is it called Back on Track? Is your program that you do with clients?
Yeah, we started a Back on Track program a while ago because over the years, early on in Pilates, I worked in a number of physical therapy / Pilates studios. And I just felt, I started getting more and more clients with back issues, a lot of herniated discs, a lot of non-specific back pain. And I really took to that area. So over time in working with people, I look for a full program because working with a back pain is, it's kind of an art and a science, you know, and it's very individualized. So our Back on Track program, it's not just the exercises, it's the exercises, it's behavioral change. We do soft tissue work with massage, ergonomics assessments, home and work. Trying to like be that wellness coach for the person that, you know, that reminds you of, hey, when you've taken a long trip for this many plane rides and this is the solution we found that works best for you an hour after landing, and write it down and help them incorporate it into their lifestyle. So it's more than just like, here's some exercises, follow me through these exercises. It's like, how can I really approach this, educate you about your body, help you either manage this condition or get to a point of overcoming it. And that's where our Back on Track program is.
And in terms of Pilates, when you think about how is it different from going out in strength training or other fitness approaches, is it specifically for people with back pain? Like, is it that Pilates focuses on the core and some of the smaller muscle groups and the back muscles, right? There's a big piece of Pilates you want to focus on your, like your back muscles and strengthening those. Is that, does that help to relieve tension for people with back issues or?
Well, I think first it's low impact.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I always like to say it's exercise that hugs you, that doesn't slap you.
I've never heard you say that, but I love it.
You can work really hard, but overall, it's not an exercise routine that beats you up. It's very hugging. So, but within the Pilates arena, when you're navigating with back pain, it's easy to modify things in the beginning to, again, learn to move without pain, to mobilize the right areas that are going to help you move more efficiently, to help you manage your spine through life. And then we're able to go in and use specific exercises to strengthen up the core in the supportive muscles to help you stabilize that spine.
Stability.
And then all held together with really good breath work that, again, teaches you to not only stabilize your spine, calm your nervous system, breathe more efficiently, and then the focused and the concentration helps you mitigate the pain pathways over time.
Okay. And so
sometimes I know I never discount anybody's pain, but I also have learned that sometimes, and you may have experienced it too, sometimes if you do a movement long enough and it's not too intense, you're able to work to a point where that pain lessens, because your brain has really nice neural pathways of pain. They remember the past. And exercise and movement is a way to like reteach your brain to be calm about that and lessen the pain.
I think most of us could use that.
Yes.
When it comes to letting go of the past.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go to, can we go to research? I know you have miles and miles of data, but what does research say out there about managing spondyloarthritis pain or rheumatic pain with Pilates?
There's been a number of studies. I'm starting to dig through the research. I found a one-year study of Pilates training for spondylitis, a pilot study. The research is like it because it's a low impact. I haven't found specific research to spondyloarthritis. There's a tremendous amount of Pilates and ankylosing spondylitis studies out there. I'm sure if I dig farther, I'll find more. But I think it's all positive. And it's all, the research is certainly use Pilates because it's a low impact approach to exercise, which is a helpful way to start. But all the research is positive.
And if I was to walk into your studio and need some assistance, when someone begins, is it better to begin slow? And does this go back to like the spring loading and some of the movement? Because right, we're all like, all of us spondies are always trying to avoid like flares, right? We're trying to avoid the overdoing that leads to the flare that becomes chronic and not acute.
Right. I mean, in most of my first session approaches with people is we're working on breath work, connecting to their deep core, which is very, very low intensity, but important foundation to move forward. And then we'll start mobilizing areas that I feel that are most needed. Ankles, hips, your thoracic spine. And then from there, we just start building a foundation of exercise that is slow and controlled so that we're able to not have a flare up. And then eventually we can add more, I think, to build confidence. I think that's important.
Yeah. And generally Pilates, when you're in the reformer, on the reformer, or the other equipment, or even mat, right? There are tools for mat, or what do they call them? They call them tools, or there's another word, not toys. I'm looking for the word in my head, but props. Thank you. You're generally pretty safe, right?
Yes. Yeah. Like I said, it's the, I keep using the word environment, but it's an environment where we can set up positive movement solutions. And whether we use props to help you, use springs to help move you, use springs to resist you, we can set up a situation where you're safe and you're able to have a slow progression and hopefully without running into flare-ups or trouble.
I like it. How often does somebody want to do Pilates?
Well, you can do it every day, you know, but going to use these machines or exercise, I would say from the strength standpoint, let's say the core, I mean, you can get benefits from twice a week. But you can do mobility work and breath work every day. In fact, one of the things I really like to teach people, especially if you've had a history of chronic pain, is how to navigate your exercise or your recovery routine when you have your body's feeling different ways. So for example, it's a bad day, you have a little bit of a flare up going on, it's okay to do a breathing practice with some mobility work, and that's your work for the day, because that's just as important as the other stuff. And if you're able to do something every day, I think it can be very empowering, because you're working on yourself every day.
Yeah. I used to have a yoga teacher, and she would say, when you're in the poses, it doesn't matter how far you go, you still get the same benefit. And I like that. I mean, I think about it some days when I can't move fully of, okay, at least I'm moving. And that's
sometimes. And I think it's important to understand that that is just as effective. It's all, you're thinking the long game, right? You're trying to manage this condition or overcome a condition, and you're trying to like live a long, active life. So some people come out of the fitness world used to these real high intensity routines. And I still have those in my repertoire of exercise from time to time. But some people, that's all they know. So if they're not able to do that, then they just don't do anything. And that's not very productive.
And let's dispel or endorse a myth here. Does Pilates actually lengthen the muscle?
I think where the word lengthen came from, because there's a, when we're working with a client, we're also doing a lot of cueing. So we're at the neuromuscular reeducation comes in. We're not just using this equipment to make you work against a resistance or move you. We're also trying to use our verbal cues and hands to teach you better posture, better alignment. So that lengthening sometimes comes from just that improvement in your body in space based on the cueing we've used.
Got it.
So you should be taller just because you're in better alignment posture.
Okay. I'm just thinking of the people who do a lot of strength training versus like the Pilates people are always very like long and lean.
Yeah, you can get into the physiology of it, and like hardcore powerlifting will develop a certain type of muscle.
Yeah.
On a frame versus something like Pilates or yoga.
Okay, so let's go back to flares for a sec. Say you've been doing Pilates for 6 months, you wake up and you have a massive flare. Would you suggest slow movement and breath work for until it passes and then come back?
Yeah. I think that's probably the smartest thing in the beginning. If you have a history of knowing your body and you're able to do a little more and not cause more of a flare, I wouldn't tell the audience to like do that. I mean, it's really your individual if you've had that experience. But I'm always going to say the breath work in the slow mobility exercises that are very less stressful are just as effective. I mean, they're an important part of your full routine. So it's okay to do that for a while.
Okay. And one question I have for you is I've heard more than once that Pilates is not a cardio substitute. And that people who are doing Pilates should also do some form of either walking or cardio that works for them, or is there a ruling on that in the Pilates world?
I like all my clients to do a walking program. I think walking is a really healthy activity. And you're right. There's not a direct cardio benefit for the most part. If you go to the nightclub Pilates class, there's probably a cardio benefit.
Yeah, I want to try this. Like, I'm going to get a gang together and we're going to go. So,
it's the cardio is not really as addressed, but however, more efficient breathing helps. And then building a body that's more stable to move more freely makes you want to do that for the most part.
Yeah, for sure. You
know, So that's why I like getting my clients who don't even do cardio to do walking programs, because in here you're able to work on creating a more stable, strong body that's able to move without or less in pain. So what's a great time to start? Walking program, swimming program, some other low impact cardiovascular activity. It can only benefit your health long term.
Good advice.
Yeah. So I think Pilates is a better, builds a good foundation for you to add that on top.
So going back to your storytelling approach, I loved that story about Joe Pilates. I did not know that he was in a camp.
Yes. Yeah.
That's crazy. Was he in Germany?
Well, he was in England at the time. He was a German national.
Right. Okay.
He came to the US and opened a studio in New York.
Okay. Crazy. But in terms of patients, do you have any major success?
1914.
Yeah. That was a long time, right? I mean, it was. And frankly, the technology, like, it's very simple technology still. Right. But story-wise, like, do you have any standouts on patients that you've worked with, whether they were rheumatic or spondyloarthritis or in general? I know you've got some really incredible stories.
Yeah, we've had a number of clients with they were in a lot of pain, you know, went through years of physical therapy and were able to come to us, and we were just able to take them to that next level where they're actually living more active lives. It's always, that's probably what one of the most rewarding parts for this profession is to see that transition. You know, like early in my life, I was young and working with professional athletes, and it was all about the performance on the field. But I think it's much more rewarding to see someone who feels less hope because of a condition, and then they're able to work the right way with time, and they're able to do so many more things in their life. And you're a part of that solution. So that happens in Pilates studios all over the country.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of the day I walked in a few months ago when I wasn't feeling great and I'm feeling 10 times better. I'd been Pilates on and off for years, but I just reached that point where my body, like, I couldn't do the higher impact stuff. And I needed to come back down and, like, start a program to get back in the swing of things. Anything new and exciting going on in Pilates these days?
Well, I was happy to see all the research. You know, I dug back into PubMed because I keep seeing all the big group class places opening up because, I mean, it's a strong financial model, you know.
Sure.
But there's a tremendous amount of research on Pilates and all kinds of medical conditions. That can only open a door for more referrals for people into the studios like ours that are used to working with populations. It's only going to benefit.
Yeah.
So.
And at what point does Pilates become part of mainstream physical therapy?
Well, I know a lot of physical therapy clinics are using Pilates, or using the equipment quite a bit. I've seen some Pilates only physical therapy clinics pop up too.
Oh, wow. I haven't seen those.
They're still using their hands and modalities that physical therapists do manipulations with, but they're using a lot of Pilates machines.
I like it. Every time I look at you, I sit up straight. You can see the image. Okay. What did I miss that we didn't cover? Because this is one of my favorites. Like, I think Pilates is, it's such a nice way. And mat too. We didn't really cover mat too much. I know a lot of instructors want people on mat. They want people to do reformer work before mat work.
Yeah. The original, especially, like, I was trained through a rehab group. I was by a bunch of physical therapists. So I was very contemporary. But I worked, let me back up. In the Pilates world, there's what they call classic and contemporary.
Yes.
Classic style are the people who are trying to stay true to the original method that Joe came up with. And then contemporary is your physical therapists and your rehab professionals doing different things, or even some of your fitness people trying new routines out. I'm always probably less than 25% of our population that embraces exercise on a regular basis. I'm always for, like, hey, if it inspires you and you can start moving and you can do it safely, whatever like gets you moving is great. Within the history of Pilates, there's like two directions Pilates took in modern world. There's the classic Pilates, which is the methodology that Joe came up with. And there's classic Pilates teachers that try to stay true to that. Just like if you said you did yoga, there's Ashtanga or Iyengar yoga teachers who are really love that style and stay true to that form. And there's people who kind of break away with that. The other side of Pilates besides the classic is more contemporary. And that's where you start getting into your rehab professionals that have used the equipment in different ways than the original methodology. I think there's a beauty in both of them. Anything that inspires you to move, especially when less than 25% of our population embraces exercise on a regular basis, I'm all for if it's done safely. You can achieve what you want out of it. But the mat work, the original mat work, I believe the equipment was supposed to help your body get strong enough to do these mat exercises, which were a sequence of exercises which were supposed to be the perfect sequence to address the entire body. And you're supposed to work to perfect it. That's where the flow principle came in, so that you can move through it. And it was supposed to be a series of exercises you could do the rest of your life every day. So a lot of people are really still love the mat work. All my clients that I work with in the studio, I give some form of mat exercise for home. I always give homework. Or I try to.
Yeah. No, I mean, I had a Pilates teacher who I will hit the mat class every now and then. And I have a recording of her going through the classical. And I've been there enough times I can cue it.
It's a great routine. Not everyone with a back condition can do that.
No, and there's a lot of it I can't do. I can't do a teaser on my butt because my lower back and my tailbone always flare.
Yeah, and some of the exercises, like any movement or mat movement, they would say it would be more like they would load you in flexion. I would advise not to do that with spondyloarthritis.
Yeah.
Just because you're just putting extra stress on those joints in the back.
Yeah. But no, it's incredible. Okay. So did we miss anything else before we wrap up?
Not that I can think of.
What's your word of hope for somebody who walks in with back pain?
My word of hope. That's a tough one. You know, it's usually through our actions that first day and teaching. You know, I'll go back, because when I made that comment about create a positive movement experience, you know, the first session with someone where I'm having them just do breath work, where they're laying on their back and doing breath work and connecting to their deep core, I'll still try to find something a little bit more challenging that's safe so that they leave with a bigger sense of accomplishment. You know, like that stability chair.
Yes, I do.
That's a go-to one for me, because it's very intimidating, but I can adjust it so that they can accomplish it. It's everything. It's core, it's posture, it's balance. And the back's in a safe position, so I rarely will feel someone get a flare-up in back from that exercise.
Yeah.
But it's much more advanced. But I know I can do it in a safe manner, and it gives them an accomplished, like I did something that's more than what I've been doing, especially if they haven't done any exercise and they've been in just physical therapy. So I always try to, in the first day, just to like have someone leave and feeling like I'm going to be able to do so much more with time.
I love that. Okay. On that note, thank you for joining us, and thank you on behalf of our community and myself for bringing solutions to movement for us. It's not always easy, and we're grateful there's people like you out there that have dedicated your lives to this. And where can people find you if they are interested in connecting?
Our website, movementmedchicago.com.
Awesome. And you're on Instagram too, yes?
Yes, Movement Med Chicago.
Amazing.
Shane.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I will see you. I want to know about the nightclub, so we're going to talk about that later.
Nightclub Pilates.
Yes. It's what I'm going to do Saturday night. All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you. SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie. Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.